You know, when we talk about reaching the edge of space, that thin blue line where the sky just turns black and you can see the curve of the Earth, we almost always think of the heavy hitters. You know, SpaceX, huge chemical rockets, billions of dollars.
No, absolutely. It's an exclusive club. The barrier to entry for space, or even near space, has always been, well, astronomical.
But I've been digging into these updates for the Stratosonde development blog, and they just overhauled this tool in November, this interactive balloon float calculator. And it just paints such a different picture. We're not talking about rockets. We're talking about something that looks like a shiny piece of party trash.
It is a striking contrast, isn't it?
Floating up to 33,000 feet.
Yeah, you have the stratosphere, this incredibly hostile, freezing, radioactive place, and we're exploring it with stuff you could basically buy at a floral supply shop. But the blog makes it really clear you can't just, you know, fill a bag with helium and hope for the best.
And that's the catch. And that's really the mission for our deep dive today. We're going to look at how you turn a cheap plastic envelope into a precision engineering marvel using just math. Because the core problem this Stratosonde calculator is solving is, it sounds simple. How do you get a balloon to just stop rising and park itself at a specific altitude without popping when you have zero control after you launch it?
That is the fundamental constraint. I mean, once you let go of that nozzle, physics is completely in the driver's seat. You don't have thrusters, you can't drop ballast to go up. You are totally at the mercy of fluid dynamics. So all of the engineering has to be done before you ever let go.
So let's unpack the physics here, because the blog uses this really, really effective analogy to explain how these superpressure flights work.
Yeah.
They compare it to diving in a swimming pool.
Right, it's fluid dynamics, just in a different fluid.
Yeah, and this really made it click for me. So they say, imagine you're at a pool, you're wearing a weight belt, you jump in the deep end, gravity pulls you down. But as you sink, the water pressure around you increases, right?
Right.
And if you're holding your breath, that pressure compresses the air inside your lungs.
And that compression is the key. As the air in your lungs gets smaller, it takes up less volume. So you displace less water, but you still weigh the same.
So you get less buoyant.
You get less buoyant and you sink faster. It's a runaway effect.
But the goal for the diver and for the balloon is to find neutral buoyancy, that magic spot where you just hover. You don't sink, you don't float.
Exactly. For a diver, that's a really unstable point. If you drop 1 inch, the pressure increases, you shrink, and you sink even more. But, and this is the crucial inversion for the balloon, the atmosphere works the exact opposite way.
Because as the balloon goes up, the air pressure decreases.
Correct. So the balloon starts on the ground, high pressure. As it rises, the pressure outside drops. The gas inside the balloon starts pushing out, expanding the envelope. It just gets bigger and bigger. So instead of shrinking and sinking like the diver, the balloon is expanding and rising until its density matches the air around it.
The blog points out what they call a critical difference here, though, which I think really sets the stage for why this calculator is even necessary. A diver can just kick their fins. You know, if I'm sinking too fast, I swim up. A balloon is just, it's a passive object. It can't make a choice.
It's a dumb object in a smart system. It's just going to obey the gas laws. And if you calculated the gas fill wrong or you didn't account for the temperature, it's going to burst or it'll stall out too low.
You've got one shot.
You have one shot to get the math right on the ground.
Which brings us to the design parameters. This is where the Stratosonde tool is so cool. It's basically a flight simulator in your browser for these things called Pico balloons.
Yeah, and the scale is just always so surprising. When we say payload, people think of a satellite. But for these, the payload your solar panel's GPS transmitter is, it's tiny.
How tiny are we talking?
Maybe 5 to 15 grams total.
To put that in perspective, a single AirPod is like 4 grams. So we're launching a little satellite that weighs as much as a pair of headphones.
Exactly. And the balloon film itself, the Mylar, is maybe 20 to 40 grams. The whole thing weighs less than a tennis ball, but when it's inflated, it takes up half a cubic meter. It's a ghost.
So I was playing around with the calculator
Yeah.
and I was messing with the inputs, and there's this one variable called free lift that really, really tripped me up.
Ah, yes.
Because my intuition was, okay, I want to go high, so I need to add more lift. I'll just put more gas in it to power it up.
That is the greed trap. It is the most common mistake for beginners.
Why? I mean, shouldn't more gas make it go higher?
No, and it's so counterintuitive. The reason is the balloon has a fixed maximum size. It's Mylar, right? It doesn't stretch like a rubber balloon.
Okay, it doesn't stretch. Got it.
So once it's full, it's full. If you put more gas in on the ground, adding more free lift, that gas expands as it rises and it just fills up the balloon envelope sooner at a lower altitude.
Oh, I see. So it hits its ceiling earlier.
Exactly. Once the balloon is full, it can't displace any more air. It stops generating extra lift. So if you overfill it at the start, you might hit your max volume at, say, 9,000 meters instead of 11,000.
You've actually capped your own altitude.
You capped it yourself by being too greedy with the gas.
Wow. So the physics actively punishes you for trying to brute force it. You have to use the minimum amount of gas you need just to get off the ground if you want to go the highest.
Within reason, yes. I mean, if you use too little lift, you'll rise so slowly you might get caught in downdrafts or stuck in the bad weather down in the troposphere. So the calculator recommends this Goldilocks zone, usually around 8 grams of free lift, just enough to get you through the clouds quickly.
Another thing that seems simple but is actually really deep is the launch conditions. The tool asks for your specific elevation and temperature at your launch site. Mm. I thought that was just for, you know, record keeping. But it changes the actual fill calculation.
Oh, drastically. Yeah. This is where the ideal gas law just dominates everything. PV equals NRT. Pressure, volume, gas, temperature, they're all locked together.
So if I'm launching from a hot parking lot in Phoenix versus a snowy field in Denver,
it changes everything. Let's say you calculate your gas based on some like textbook standard temperature, but you're actually launching on a hot day.
Okay.
You fill the balloon with warm gas. The moment that balloon hits the stratosphere where it's minus 50 Celsius,
it shrinks.
It shrinks.
Yeah.
That gas contracts significantly.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you don't have enough lift. Your balloon just stops rising at 20,000 feet and dies.
Yeah.
So the calculator forces you to input your launch temp so it can compensate. It tells you to add a little extra gas now to account for that shrinkage later.
It's preemptive problem solving. You're fixing a problem that hasn't even happened yet.
You have to. You can't exactly climb up there with a tank to top it off.
Right. So let's move to the most dramatic part of this update, the safety systems.
Yay.
The November update is specifically for spherical Mylar superpressure balloons. We keep saying that word, superpressure. What makes it different from a normal weather balloon?
So a normal weather balloon is latex. It's stretchy. As it goes up, it just expands and expands and expands until pop. It bursts, payload comes down. It's a vertical flight, up and down.
Right.
A superpressure balloon is designed to stay up. It uses a non-stretch material like Mylar. It rises until it gets fully inflated. At that point, it can't get any bigger. But it still has a little bit of upward lift. So that causes the pressure inside the balloon to become slightly higher than the pressure outside.
And that's the super pressure.
That's the super pressure. And you want that for stability. The biggest enemy of these long flights is the sun. Day, the gas heats up, expands. Night, it cools down, shrinks.
The sunset problem.
Exactly. With a super pressure balloon, you pressurize it just enough so that even when the gas cools down at night, the balloon stays rigid. It stays full. It keeps its volume, which means it keeps its density.
So it doesn't sink.
It doesn't sink. It can fly through the night.
But there's a limit to that pressure, right? I mean, if it gets too high, the plastic is going to fail.
That is the burst point. And that's what this new calculator visualizes so well. It calculates the differential pressure. That's the war between the gas pushing out and the Mylar seams holding it in.
The blog describes this new interface with these, like, color-coded safety zones. It feels very traffic light. Green, yellow, red.
It's a great piece of UI design. It gives you immediate feedback on the stress you're putting on that material. So green is under 2.8 kilopascals. You're safe.
And then you hit the danger zone.
Right. If your design pushes the pressure over 4.1 kilopascals, the tool just flags it red, danger. Because Mylar usually bursts around 4.8, the calculator is showing you, hey, if you try to go too high or carry too much, you are building a small bomb that will go off at 33,000 feet.
Which leads right into the core trade-off section. Mm. The calculator has these little intuition boxes that help you see it. And it seems like the cruelest trade-off is altitude versus safety.
It is the classic engineer's dilemma. We all want to fly higher. The winds are smoother up there. You're above the storms. The view's better. But higher altitude means lower outside air pressure.
Which means the pressure difference pushing on the balloon skin is higher.
Exactly. The higher you go, the harder the gas is trying to explode the balloon. So you have to make a choice. Do you want to try for 12,000 meters and risk a pop? Or do you play it safe at 10,000?
Or I guess you could make the payload lighter.
That's your third lever. If you can shave just 2 grams off your tracker, maybe you cut off a connector, use a smaller battery, you need less lift. That reduces the internal pressure, and suddenly you can go higher safely just by being a little bit lighter. The calculator lets you see that instantly. You change the payload weight, and that safety dial just swings from red back to green.
It almost gamifies the engineering process. Like you're just tweaking variables to get the high score maximum altitude without hitting game over on the burst pressure.
That's a really good way to put it. It turns your intuition into actual data.
I do want to touch on the tool itself, though. The Stratoson Float Calculator. The update in November changed the visuals a lot. They moved altitude to the y-axis.
Which sounds trivial, but for anyone who works in meteorology, that's huge. Standard atmospheric charts always have altitude on the vertical axis. It just helps you visualize the balloon rising.
And they added this step-by-step breakdown. It doesn't just spit out the final answer. It shows its work.
Yeah, it calculates system density, then gas fill volume, then your final float altitude. It's educational. It's showing you the equation. It's not a black box anymore.
But the blog is very specific. They make a distinction between this web calculator and their other tool, the Python predictor. The web tool is for equilibrium. The Python tool is for trajectory. Why do you need two different tools for that?
Because the web calculator is a static snapshot. It assumes a perfect world. It just tells you, if everything is stable, this is where you will float.
But the real world is dynamic.
It's chaos. The web tool won't tell you that at 4 p.m., a thermal updraft from a mountain range might push you up 2,000 feet and cause you to burst.
Okay.
It won't tell you the jet stream is going to carry you over the Atlantic where you have no radio coverage.
And that's what the Python predictor is for.
Yes. The Python tool simulates the flight over time. Days, weeks. It pulls in live weather data, solar heating, cloud cover. But that takes a lot of computing power. You can't run that on your phone in a field.
So the web calculator is the tactical tool. It's the go-no-go gauge before you launch.
It is the foundational physics check. If the web calculator says your balloon will burst, no amount of Python simulation is going to save you. You have to pass the static test before you even worry about the dynamic weather test.
It validates the basic design, and apparently this new web tool was validated against that big Python simulation.
Yes, and against the old UCAS SPLAT calculator, which was kind of the gold standard for years, the results lined up, which gives people confidence that this pretty new interface isn't just a toy. It's built on solid physics.
It really feels like it's democratizing a very niche field. I mean, 10 years ago, if you wanted to do this, you probably need an aerospace engineering degree and some expensive software.
Or a very, very complicated Excel spreadsheet that you built yourself and just hoped didn't have a typo in a formula somewhere.
Right.
Now it's a web link. You drag a slider. You see the result. It lowers the barrier so much that high schools are doing this now.
It is amazing to think about the accessibility. But what really sticks with me is just the fragility of it all. We are trusting a web page to tell us exactly how much gas to put in a plastic bag so it can survive an environment that would kill a person in seconds.
And it works. That's the beautiful part. The atmosphere is chaotic, yes. The winds are unpredictable. But the gas laws, the relationship between pressure, volume, temperature, that stuff is absolute. It's consistent.
So if you respect the math, the physics respects you back.
Exactly. You can navigate the chaos if your starting conditions, your inputs, are mathematically perfect.
So for the listener who's thinking, this is cool, but I'm not an engineer, why does this matter? What's the big takeaway?
I think the takeaway is that we can now engineer neutral buoyancy as a precise destination. It's not a guess anymore. It turns this chaotic adventure into a solvable equation. You can sit at your desk, move a slider, and predict with incredible accuracy where a physical object is going to sit in the stratosphere.
It's the triumph of simulation over the unknown.
It is. It's proof that we understand the atmosphere well enough to surf it.
I love that. Surfing the atmosphere on a board made of math.
And a little bit of helium.
Well, this has certainly expanded my understanding, pun intended, of what really goes into these launches.
It really is a precision operation.
It is. If you want to play with the calculator yourself, we will have the link to the Stratoson blog in the show notes. Go try to break the physics engine. See how high you can get before that red danger light comes on.
Just don't try it with a real balloon until you get the green light.
Sound advice. I want to leave you with one final thought today. We spend so much of our lives dealing with things we just can't control. Traffic, the weather, the economy. But there is something really profound in the fact that you can take a 10-gram robot, attach it to a piece of plastic thinner than a human hair, and by using nothing but a browser and some physics, you can park it 30,000 feet above the Earth for weeks. It's this silent, invisible victory of order over chaos happening right above our heads. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.